Hello, guys. Coming from quarantine Moscow to you, it's Tech Hunter. My name is Ivan, creative director of Tech Hunter magazine. Together with me is Nikita.
Hello, everyone.
And coming live from Canada, it's TechWare Intern.
How's it going, guys? Nice to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to finally be able to speak to you after that long. Actually, like, we go way back from, like, we started talking to you about, I think, when you first did your 30 days challenge thing back in, like, when was it?
That was back in February 2018, back when I was just one man in a sewing machine. And it's been fun having all these discussions with you and so many other makers and individuals the past couple years. We've been using that time to sort of catch up and be able to build the necessary infrastructures and times and support structure so that we can do exactly things like this. And we're really excited to finally get things off the ground here.
So yeah, if I understand correctly, now you're preparing to launch your next 30-day challenge. Can you brief us in and our listeners about what it is and what's it all about and how it changed from the last time? Because this is, if I understand correctly, it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, essentially, in, like I say, February 18, I was an intern at a local Vancouver design studio. And I'm a bit of a tenacious person, and I always have a little bit of a problem. Why is this like this? Why is it not like that? And essentially, management put me to the challenge of saying, okay, listen here, punk. Why don't you put your money where your mouth is and go and try to make a project in a single day? So I decided to say, well, maybe this is an opportunity for me to get some employment, some work. So I took to the internet and I said, I'm going to make a new project every single day from scratch for 30 days straight. And this response from that was enormous. I did get the job offers, but I came with the caveat, and everybody kind of suggested that maybe I should go and start my own business and try to build up our own brand. So fast forward to now, and Intern is a small crew. We have a whole bunch of different people here from different backs of life, from film to chemistry to fashion and so. So now we're here to do another 30-day challenge, but this time we want to show more of the industry insights. Like I said, over the past 2 years, we've been building our own infrastructure, becoming a genuine, bona fide studio. So now it's time to show off, what goes into making a product. How do you deal with sourcing materials? How do you deal with communicating with different brands? How do you deal with process of contract work? So on and so forth. So this time we want to show a little bit about what's the latest and greatest from industry, what does industry have to share, and what do other makers have to share alongside us. So this time it's kind of like an open call to remote collaborate. Let's ping out together. Let's do some things. Let's share capacity. Perhaps one person is an excellent photographer. Maybe another person is an excellent sewist. Maybe another person is an excellent artist. By powers combined, you have the capacities of a small studio. So we're trying to figure out a mechanism where we can kind of bring that together through the internet with all these incredible talents we've met.
Yeah, I mean, your work lately has been a lot of educational stuff, and we really appreciate you helping us at ISPO and sharing a lot of insights about the whole trip. How was it, by the way? We weren't able to be in ISPO this time around, and sadly, I don't think we're going to go to the next ISPO since everything is being canceled. I think ISPO canceled the whole their outdoor 2020 exhibition. Can you
them and everybody else right now? Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, and by the way, since we're on the topic, I don't like a lot of information about quarantine, but I bet you have a lot of things to do in your facility. How has it been? How long have you been in there?
Yeah, so first of all, I'll start with the trip because that's a good way to kind of bounce right into quarantine. So me and the boys, like I say, we spent the past couple years trying to build up the infrastructure to have an order of magnitude more supply and sourcing than even some of the big brands. So we spend between the lot of us, there's probably 9 months on the road a year, just constant traveling. So I'm usually the one that's stationary in the studio, but this time I had the rare opportunity to leave and take out. So we started in Munich and we ended up in Amsterdam and traveled around from there. Well, yeah, ISPO was incredible. You know, it's a gathering of about 80,000 souls that are there to check out several thousand of the latest and greatest brands from materials, supply, buckles, hardware, trims, webbing.
Your buckles.
All the way through to all the way through to textiles, and then actual brands themselves that are there to show off the latest projects from each year. And I will say, having the press credentials and being there on behalf of Tech Hunter was a huge benefit for us. Having this hybrid character, like the battle mage, we were able to, you know, be the designers that were very interested, obviously, in what the competition is up to. But also having the press credentials, letting us go in and have the meetings and sit down with brands and see what they're actually wanting to do in the next couple of years. For Intern Techware, where we're looking to develop the technologies that go into the manufacturing and the processes and the production lines that eventually get adopted by the larger brands. It's really good to know what these trends are and how these work. So I came home at the end of February after about 6 weeks on the road, and I have been in the studio since. I think I've gone outside maybe twice, go to the grocery store. We have 4 bedrooms that we installed here in the studio so that we can invite other makers.
Your little man cave.
Yeah, pretty much. We have about 5,000 square feet, a little over 5,000 square feet of space. We put in 4 bedrooms so we can invite makers and designers from around the world to come and join us. Essentially say, you know, the fridge is stocked, the studio is full, all the machines have thread. Show us what you got, you know, go and play.
So that that sounds like a good quarantine time.
Quarantine for me is business as usual. I very rarely leave the studio. I do what I love and I love what I do, and spent the past 10 years trying to get to the point where I could have a facility where me and my coworkers and colleagues and other makers could essentially just wake up in the morning and do the thing that we want to do. And it's been very exciting, and it's finally functional.
We need to send you some stuff to put in the fridge, so, you know, whenever we came around, you have a little bottle hanging there, you know, just saying.
Yeah, I'm all for that. You know, growing up with the Eastern European family, you know, I'm no stranger to delicious pickled beverages and a little vodka here and there.
Yeah, that sounds like a really well-timed quarantine for you.
We wanted to kick off the 30-day challenge right now with all the talk of the quarantine. You know, we actually wanted to do this in February so that we could get this cadence of February to February. But with all the chaos kicking off, we started considering that maybe our approach to remote collaboration, remote design, innovating from afar, because like I say, I very rarely leave the studio, and our team is usually traveling all over the world, and our customers are all over the world. So I think that our method of kind of working with people remotely could have a lot of benefit to the community as well. So this is the opportunity where we can kind of share this with the world while everyone's locked in their house, unfortunately, and maybe do some fun things together.
Yeah, well, do you, like, stuck inside, like everybody else is just like, at this point in time, is probably figuring what to do. What is the industry in this context going to do with, you know, basically everything? Since, like, I'm pretty sure a lot of it has been delayed, at least on one quarter of a year, like deliveries, you know, fabrics, all that stuff.
Absolutely.
What is gonna, in your opinion, obviously, was that effect on the industry in general and like future?
So, like I say, we work with a lot of different suppliers from literally every corner of the globe. And I don't think there's been a single email that we've received in the past couple months that hasn't had some sort of COVID caveat at the end where it's saying, you know, our capacity is minimized. You know, we're working from home. We don't have access to servers. No, I can't tell you it's in the warehouse right now because we're not going to the warehouse. All the way down to our business has COVID affecting our employees, and like our factory is affected. So I know that I saw an interview very recently where Adidas said they were losing about $100 million a week. And even that was about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I know that just about every brand that the consumer has as a public face with, if they're a brand of any size, they generally deal with the supply chain that is looking right now. Designers would be working on spring, summer, or fall, winter 2022. Possibly even 2023 collections. So if you consider that the supply chain, all the things that are going to be coming into the stores for 2020, they've already been manufactured. It's already just a kind of a plan of just the logistics end. But the 2021, I'm going to say that the spring, summer, and maybe even the fall, winter collections of 2021 are definitely going to be affected. And I think this is a really great opportunity, again, for the smaller brands and the smaller makers to come forward and with these more elastic response times, being able to kind of fill these gaps.
So for 2020, spring, summer, and all that stuff, you mean that the pipeline of small brands is just, you know, ruined, broken for next season and maybe for the whole 2020 year?
Well, the big thing is you know, the smaller brands, although they have the capacity and the ability to be able to respond a little faster, what they don't have is the overhead to be able to survive, you know, the downtime. But speaking with friends of ours at Outlier, you know, they launched a like a quarantine sale. Mind you, it was the first time Outlier's ever done a sale. It was about 15% off. It's pretty exciting. But they're seeing record sales figures at this point in time. And I think there's a lot of people that are sitting at home, you know, not spending money that they were usually spending, kind of bored, scrolling, looking for a little bit of that, you know, emotional satisfaction that comes from just making a purchase.
Buying stuff, yeah.
So we're hoping we can kind of re-harness a little bit of that instead of just buying unnecessary stuff. Maybe we can get people together and learn some skills. And, you know, you mentioned we're always looking to share some educational content. And this is going to be the big shift for us this year, is actually sharing everything and trying to put the mechanisms in place where we can share and respond to just about everything, contributing with you guys through articles and being able to do podcasts like this, but also just the content, putting up a website of our own where we can continuously share just what's going on. Because as much as we try to help everybody that reaches out, we probably only reveal about maybe 5% of what's actually going on here at Intern. And I want to show everything from patterns to true costs to logistics to the manufacturing.
All the links to Intern's everything will be in the descriptions, obviously. But continuing on that idea about small manufacturers affected by, like, all this craze and shutting down of everything. I think we talked to you, like me and you talked about the fact that, you know, back in the day, again, when you were doing the DIY projects, is that it is actually in this time, like in such situations, sometimes even people can understand the value of such small, like, creators who are not, you know, again, affected by the industry in large, because they can produce what the people around them want. And what is the true cost of this, like, plague, I guess, to such people? Because you're obviously trying, with your projects, you're trying to connect those people together to be able to support them. We try to support, like, smaller local or international, you know, DIYers, small projects, with everything we can, but, like, people, you know, do not usually support such small brands because they don't have credentials. And right now, mm-hmm. it's a time, I think, for such people to earn their credentials, because they are actually able to, I guess, create, even though, you know, everything is happening around them. What is your personal opinion about such things?
Well, it's there's a big perspective on, you know, just it's since the ability.
Since you have the perspective from the industry, at, you know, the big industry and the brand.
It's a big question. And even just sitting at home and saying, you know, I'm going to sit down at the sewing machine, I'm going to cut some fabric, I'm going to make a little thing and put it on the internet and see if people are interested. Even in those situations where people are really interested and they do, and it does explode, there is so much extra that goes into supporting an idea to become an actual product, from you know, the communication story to be able to support it online, the ability to actually be able to collect people's money and be able to actually sell the product, be able to just packaging tickets, like every little tiny detail, even in logistics. What we didn't realize setting out in this whole thing is, if you're a small business working in this industry, in the early days, you can expect to spend about 25% of your total expenses are going to be on logistics alone and just shipping. And so I think right now dealing with all this, I think there's going to be a big opportunity in that there's going to be a lot of canceled orders. There's going to be a lot of fabric that has been made that is unclaimed, that is going to be up for grabs for pretty cheap. But again, it's the knowledge of the whole textiles engine that really creates a lot of the opportunities. And the materials world is not like very many other industries. Even when you go to a booth and you see like a whole rack of samples and this is what we can do, that's exactly what that represents. It's a, this is what we are able to do. It's not so much, this is what we have for you to buy. So I'd say the thing that we get reached out with the most, especially from small businesses, is saying, where can I get this fabric? Where can I get access to this textile? How can I work with this mill? And at the end of the day, it's, you know, almost every piece of textile that you have seen has been made custom to order for that particular run. When you are making a shirt or you're making a coat or a pair of pants or what have you, the minimum order quantity for most things typically is, you know, 1,500 to 5,000 meters of product. So when you're doing that, you have the ability to customize, you know, what kind of yarns you're using, what kind of performance you're getting. Even if it does fall into a general overarching brand category, it's a little bit like being able to order a fully customized riced out Honda Civic directly from Honda. And then at the same time, if Honda didn't actually have any Honda Civics on their lots, it was a system where you walk in and you kind of build your fully riced out drifting car with them, and that's all they offer. So we set out like about a year ago to say, hey, let's do a group buying system. Let's contact all these textile mills. Let's find out who's interested in doing some low volume purchasing and reduce the barrier of entry. And what we found out is that we ended up having to do a lot of contracts, a lot of work. We had to build relationships with these mills, find clients and do projects where we're able to order tens of thousands of yards of material from them. So that when we come to them now and we say, hey, we would like to start a group buying platform, we'd like to make some of these hardwares, these trims, these materials more accessible, they're actually listening to us. And that's one of the things we're going to launch in the next few weeks with the 30-day challenge, is figuring out a way where we can give people access to textiles and materials for the same sort of price that the mills offer them for, and not the 300-500% markups you see at some of the third-party suppliers that do low volume.
So it's going to function like a snowball. I mean, the whole these badass problems from all the meals and fabrics.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the big thing is, you know, having access to the same sort of supply chain and the same sort of materials and development and innovations that the biggest brands in the world are using today. We're trying very hard to bring that to the maker. And it's going to start out with probably a limited cross-section of materials from each supplier. In some cases, some materials that we've developed specifically to meet some of the demands and questions. But we found some suppliers that will deal with us and produce items in yardage like as low as 100 or 300 yards. So if we can get like 10 people, that's about 30 yards a piece. That gives you enough to play around and maybe even do a small production run of pouches or bags or something like this. So I think there's definitely going to be like a crushing amount of bankruptcy and financial impact due to all this corona. But at the end of the day, there's going to be opportunities emerging. And we're dancing really hard right now to figure out how some of the hits that have come to big business could be potentially beneficial to all the other people around the world. Because I'm going to imagine there are probably hundreds of millions of yards of textiles right now that aren't going to be used for their intended purpose.
Mm. So yeah, that's clear. And from the financial crisis, I mean, there is one more big fact, and in such harsh times the consumers are, you know, more attentive to their purchases, and it's not like a, you know, psychological defense, it's just a concern for their financial situation and comfort. So the sustainable development is also is at the top of the hill. So
oh man, so I have to interject there. So especially even rounding back to ISPO, you walk around the floor of ISPO and again, and there's thousands of textile mills representing every little avenue. And apparently the industry is sustainable now. If you walk around and you take every little piece of marketing and verbiage at face value, you know, everybody's green, everybody's sustainable, everybody's using water bottles, bioplastics, corn husks, everything you can imagine. And 99.9% of it is bullshit. There are some really, really exciting new materials out there, and there are some incredible biodegradable and compostable options in development as well. But yeah, in terms of recyclability, if you have a product that is made from a material that can be recycled, but then you've printed on it, or you've coated it, or you've added a DWR or whatever it may be, that is now a compromised material. We really don't have the capacity or the technology to really effectively and efficiently split and divide polymers once they've been blended together. Very, very recently, and I would say like one of the most exciting things is working in polymer chemistry for the past like 25 years. Well, maybe not that long, 20 years or so. My father owned a carbon fiber manufacturing plant. So even as a kid, I got to grow up inside a really state-of-the-art plastics factory and playing around in a machine shop and playing around with composite materials. But the thing that has always been an issue in the world of plastics manufacturing and polymer manufacturing, textiles development, has been the word recycled. It's been a black word, man. It's a four-letter word in the industry of manufacturing up until very recently, because the inconsistency you would get of recycled materials and the pressures involved of things like injection molding means that if you have an inconsistent thing, it could actually completely ruin your tooling. But very recently, we've started seeing recycled nylons, 100% recycled nylon fabrics, which is really exciting. And like I say, there's a whole bunch of exciting biopolymers, covalently bonded copolymers, and some really cool things out there that we're going to write some more articles out as we reach out to some of these companies and get down to the brass tacks of it all. But the word sustainability is something that you really need to be concerned about. You might see a tag on a garment in one of these fast fashion shops that says something like, you know, 100% recycled polyurethane or something. But that will literally refer. Yeah, you'll see a tag that says 100% recycled, or this product is 100% recycled. That literally refers only to the tag in which those words are printed on. That's how clever the industry has become.
I mean, Apple, for example, they use 100% green energy, and it's only in their offices in a small portion. And all of this is just paid, you know, to the grid. You pay, you know, for like whatever the Americans have with this whole system of green energy, where you can buy futures and stuff.
You can't really compare the exploits of a $1 trillion business.
I'm just saying it's marketing a lot of marketing.
I'll give you an example. You know, there's a lot of people out there that are looking to make like phone cases and things like this. When Apple went out to develop its little snap-in iPhone case, they spent $750 million to create the supply chain and everything required before they were even manufacturing product.
Yeah, well, they certainly can do that.
Exactly.
And like saying, for me, for example, the most exciting thing about this whole Corona thing is that, you know, it's shown people that the short-term shutdown, you know, has some kind of a positive impact on the environment. Like, I mean, it will obviously be ruined after the whole thing. And like, again, Chinese factories are already doing their, you know, starting up and doubling up their production rates. But like, you've seen the, you know, the pictures and stuff. It's literally...
When people have this opportunity to make that comparison, right, it raises the questions of
why you need all this energy and like all this pollution and stuff, like why you need much materials.
One of the biggest textile companies on the planet, they probably do about 1 billion yards of material every month, has asked us to, is it possible to create a fully compostable, biodegradable technical coat? Not just saying, hey, we used a technical material and then remove everything except for the material, but actually developing everything from the coatings to the adhesives to the zippers to the pulls to the cords to the Velcro, all the different things that would go into a typical kind of design. We've been challenged to try to bring all the industry partners necessary to achieve that so that it can stand as a sort of proof case for industry. Look what can be done. Why aren't you thinking like this? It was really interesting walking around ISPO asking people, like, what do you have for biodegradability or what do you have for compostability? Sort of the next step beyond recycled. And the answer generally was there wasn't enough market demand for it yet, so we're not interested in it. And yeah, the irony is...
people will catch up, I think, maybe, hopefully.
Well, the irony is that, like I was saying before, the textile industry isn't like a lot of other industries, and the whole innovation engine in the soft goods and fashion industry is really interesting. And this is why Intern has kind of found a little gray spot in between the technology vendors and the manufacturers and the material suppliers and the brands that generally get the credit for all the innovation. What we've learned in the past couple of years is that what happens is a material vendor or a technology supplier will actually make a trip and go and visit a design house of a big brand. They'll show off the latest and greatest. This is what we have. Here's our cool technology. Here's our new welding machine. Here's our new textile, whatever it might be. And then the designers think, hey, that's kind of neat. There's a new kind of thing in our little arsenal that we could take advantage of. And they'll figure out how to kind of usually misapply this in a sort of loosely interpreted way. And then the factory generally has to figure out all the technical goods on how it's done. So it's really interesting that at the street level, the brands get all the value and the hype for having assembled all this. But in reality, it's like their doors are open and all these brands are coming and showing off the technology and they're just kind of assembling the pieces. So there's a big opportunity to kind of shift the way that we develop and the way that we design that doesn't necessarily have to use sustainable materials and sustainable approaches, but just designing things that reduce redundancies and create efficiencies during manufacturing. It's very easy to design something that looks great, but is very difficult to manufacture. With a little bit more consideration and an understanding of the whole pipeline and supply chain and process, you can design things that look really great and are also incredibly efficient to manufacture, which not only improves your quality control and the quality of your garments and the quality of your product, but it also reduces the cost and the time and allows you to bring something to market that is a much lower price.
I mean, a lot of this in regards to the brand is obviously some hype, you know, to sell their products and see everything is just, you know, at the end of the day, they have to sell things, just let's be clear. And, you know, whatever marketing ideas they have, you know, they put it on the tag and whatever, just like without actually concerning the, you know, maybe they should do that or they should reduce, you know, their carbon footprint, whatever.
We have one customer that we just started with that we're actually going to be focusing a little bit on them with the 30-day challenge too, because they are the first people that we have talked to in the past 2 years that have given us work that have said, share everything. We want to reveal everything just like you do. They're called Delta and Time, and their whole ethos is, can we sort of mix up a little bit like you were talking a minute ago, like how can you create value that can be perceived to the customer that they actually want to give the money and want to support the brand and want to kind of add that credibility to the smaller brands. And I think these guys have a unique approach in that they have a whole new way of approaching fit. They have a whole new way of approaching patterning. And they want to share absolutely every facet, all the way down from the manufacturing to the sourcing and the story. And they're going to let us do a lot of the storytelling for them as we develop the technologies and the whole, let's say, anthropometric system to support their designs.
But like, are there multiple examples like this, or just like, you know, it's just right now people are waking up, I guess, and brands again and the production, you know, houses and all that, they're, I think, slowly understanding finally that there is more to producing, you know, Gore-Tex jackets, you know, in technical.
Well, if you want to get into it, let's rewind all the way back to like 1998, 1999. Yep. The whole world thought that the apocalypse was coming. They thought was going to be this Y2K thing, and the level of innovation that boomed in that period was absolutely astonishing. Especially in the fashion world, and especially out of the really small European brands from what's now Czechia and Italy, and even out of Russia and things like this. There's some really cool explorations. Philips and Samsonite did some cool stuff together where they put some MP3 players and phones and things into some coats for the first time. Britney Spears, in an article with Britney Spears, was the very first mention of the word techwear. I believe it was when she was wearing the metal dress. That was, I think it was a People's Choice article.
Something like that.
Anyway, we fast forward through to like 2001 through, let's say, 2007. And that kind of innovation still kept afoot. We saw a lot of cool things. Acronym obviously emerged in this time. I think Stone Island built a lot of its brand credibility during this time. The very concept of techwear started to boom. But then all of these small brands were kicked in the teeth by the last economic recession in 2008. You know, everything shifted gears, And there was really only one company that said, you know, we're not really going to shift gears. We're going to go business as usual. We're going to tread forward, and we're just going to make Gore-Tex coats. And that was North Face. And because of North Face's persistence to this whole system and the way that they developed the model and the way that they created success, that created the emergence of everything has to be breathable. Everything has to be a waterproof breathable. And, you know, the technology is semi-functional in some situations, but a lot of it is also made out of Teflon. And Teflon is a horrible poisonous substance that really should have never made it to market. That's a story for another day.
Yeah, that's a story for another day.
At the end of the day, for the past 10 years or so, innovation has been incredibly stagnant. We've seen a lot of the same things. We've seen a lot of regurgitation. In the big brands, you know, decisions have been very safe. They've been very consistent. Because of this model of, you know, adapt a couple suppliers, find the people that come hell or high water can get you 500,000 yards of fabric, and just stay the course. And I'd also like to point out that this was also around the emergence of like social media and targeted advertising.
So it's has become more advertisement than the technology itself.
Not only that, but like if you're working in media, even if you're trying to use, you know, the big data to your advantage, and you're actually trying to develop these trends and you're trying to develop the consumer taste, I would argue that the voice of advertising has been far louder than the actual consumer voice for quite some time, especially just because of how clever it is in trying to hide ads as a consumer voice. So when you're going in through and you're trying to develop next season's set of advertisements and next season's set of targeted kind of products, I think a lot of it has been influenced by the voice that the brands and the industry themselves put out without realizing it. You know, you're kind of in a big echo chamber, you start doing research, and I'd say 50% of it is based off of the shit that you put out the year before. And when you do that 10 years on over, keep fast forwarding, keep recycling, eventually you're just responding to the shit that you said last year, and you think you're right on track. But the irony is when you start saying, hey, this year this product is the greatest thing that has ever been made and nothing else matters, aren't you kind of kicking me in the balls as a customer that just spent a whole bunch of money on you 6 months ago? Shouldn't you give me some sort of hat tip that there was still some value to what you just did?
Here's the one and maybe, you know, the last huge problem of, you know, just techware itself, because it depends
it's
on
just
its,
repeating itself. Yeah.
Self-repeating
depends on its soul.
Huge consumption. So what about, you know, all year round collections? Does it matter?
Oh, that's the way things that are being released, the way things that are being sold, it definitely is changing like all over the world, right? Even just in the past few years, we've seen, you know, selling whole collections directly at the runway show. One of the interesting things we've seen in the way things are sold and the way things push is, like I say, you know, everything is changing, and because of the access to all these technologies, just like in textiles, you know, individuals have access to just as much infrastructure and voice as big brands. And some of the buyers that we know that typically would enact in a situation where they would go to a runway show and then maybe go behind the scenes and be able to actually see all the collections that are supposed to end up in stores. In that moment, they would make all of their decisions. They'd say, you know, I like these pieces. The brand would go away and they would essentially put together their collections a little bit like a cable TV package. They might have already committed to manufacture some shorts that nobody wanted, so they packaged the shorts in with the sweater that everybody wanted, you know, trying to just create a demand for something where they've already put the money out. But what we're starting to see now is these buyers that typically would be there on behalf of major retailers now have WhatsApp, and they can just jump on WhatsApp and they'll have a couple hundred thousand followers because people know that they're fashion buyers. And in the 15 minutes of them looking at products, they can place an order that is probably two or three times larger than what a retailer can do, selling directly to consumers in that moment, right in that instant. So that in itself is shifting up the way that retail works. And I think coming back to Delta and Time, shifting up the way that consumer works, these guys, you know, everybody wants to go set out and make the perfect product. And everybody's idea of perfect product is really deterministic on what you want to do with that pair of pants, that sweater, those pair of shoes, the hat, whatever it might be. The Delta and Time guys essentially set out with a model to allow anybody to create their perfect product. And their system is built specifically for direct to retail. And what they've sort of come up with is an entire collection of just about anything that you could want to make in terms of garments or accessories, but allowing the retailer to create all the customizations all the way down to materials and price point for their market, you know, adding the pockets for the things that their customers want and so on and so forth. So I thought that was a really interesting take, and that's why I brought them up earlier, is that, you know, they're out to make everybody's product ideal and not just create the ideal product. And that's a radical change that has us really excited. I think it's really
ideal product is only ideal in your head, I guess, at this point in time.
Yeah, exactly. But so
are there examples like that? At like summarizing, for example, we're now entering into our third decade of, you know, the 2000s, and you've been to the ISPO 2020, which is supposed to be all the latest and greatest. But are there like some takeaways from there that you personally wanted to share? Like, you can also, by the way, listeners, you can check out the, you know, the article and, you know, a summary of ISPO by TechWare intern team at our website, and also at their account, all links below. But speaking about it, are there anything that is particularly interesting to your, well, connoisseur taste, I guess?
You know what? It was actually pretty shocking how similar and vapid a lot of the products were coming out. You know, everybody's trying to tout, hey, we're the latest and greatest. And they, like, for example, it might be like ski boots. And there'll be next to 25 other companies that are selling ski boots. I would say the biggest takeaway and the thing that blew my mind the most was how many brands are out there that you have never heard of that apparently have huge markets. You know, some of these like multi-million dollar booths on display with a logo up on top that you've just never heard of, that are catering to, you know, we supply all the ski gear to every ski resort in Europe kind of thing. Like these really unique kind of markets. But I'd say one of the brands that really jumped out to me with a super cool aesthetic, a unique perspective, I also like their use of materials, great constructions, was Aris, A-R-Y-S. They were pretty cool. There was, you know, I like to think that I'm an obsessive designer. I don't see design as like a passion. I see it more as this like cancer that is eating away at you that you have to do something about or else it'll kill you. So it's this, there are these moments in life when I get really, really excited as a creative, when you see a product and you go, oh, fuck you. Like, really? Fuck you. And it's that moment when you can appreciate a design so much and you can understand like what has gone in to take it to where it is. I think in those little moments when you're like, wow, there's an absolutely unstoppable quest for perfection and obsession here. And that was Unique Eyewear, Y-N-I-Q, I believe is how it was spelled.
Oh, yeah, those guys.
The industrial designer, we got to speak with him at ESPO, and like it was just a kindred spirit moment, one of those things where it's like, yeah, you know, you can't let good get in the way of perfection sometimes. And if you have to sit in his chair and stare at a wall for 2 weeks just because you need to figure out how to like make that screw the way that you want it to be, then that's what it takes. Unfortunately, very few customers allow you to do that on their own time. So these are usually the passion projects reserved for that, you know, that Maven creator. But yeah, you know, the excellent, amazing, beautiful, wonderful things exist all over the world, and from raw materials through to technologies, through to products. And we just kind of get excited about doing what we call cool shit with cool people. You find the folks that are looking to kind of shift things up. And we find that usually it's the smaller brands that are looking to shift things up. Usually it's the voice in the back of the room. It's the student or the trainee or the intern. It's very rarely the person whose name is on the building. So that's why we wanted to create the platform that essentially said, if we looked back and we said when we first entered this industry and we were all full of piss and vinegar, there's an incredible level of design and enthusiasm that comes from just not knowing what you don't know yet. And I wanted to just create a platform that said, you know, everything that I wish I had when I came out of school, can it exist here in one spot? And that's what Intern HQ has become.
That's hell of an inspiration right there.
About cool shit again. Cool. What's your thoughts on this new type of membrane? I guess it's developed by Fujitsu. So,
which one's this? So we've seen a lot of membrane technologies, and in fact, we've developed some ourselves, and we've worked with just about everything you can imagine, from typical stretch Teflon membranes. Electrospun, nanoporous.
This one just non-regular.
But I want to get to. I think there's only one membrane that is worth discussing, in my opinion, and I think it's. I'm going to describe it as a jet fighter in the age of propellers. And it's BenQ's X-Pore.
Yeah, BenQ's, not Fujitsu.
And so BenQ has come out of the woodwork, and they make just about every LCD that you guys know of. There's only a few companies in the world that actually make the LCD panels. So they come from a world of making all the films behind the LCDs, the light diffusions. They do a lot of medical stuff in terms of like reverse osmosis filters and things like this. And they're a couple $1 billion, and they have developed a new materials division with the entire complete capacity of the BenQ empire behind them. And one of the things they've created is a polyolefin based membrane. So it doesn't use any solvents and it's PFC free. And a polyolefin is very interesting because in certain compositions, it'll decompose a lot like the rocket fuel inside the SpaceX rocket. When you see these things blast off into the air, they're just leaving a trail of CO2 and water. And olefin can break down in the same sort of way. So it has a really low environmental impact. It's a very basic polymer in terms of its complexity compared to something like a ultra high molecular weight polyethylene or something like this, or a Spectra.
Or Dyneema, yes.
Yeah. So and the thing that is really astonishing is because they have this huge technology facility and they have all the labs and testing equipment, they've gone out and they have purchased every single type of membrane you can imagine from every different supplier in both raw material and jacket forms, and have tested them and washed them and have put them through scan electron microscopy and all these cool things like this. And when you actually compare apples to apples to in all of the testing results, one of the things that makes X-Pore stand out is they're able to say, we have a 100 nanometer pore size. This is the same sort of consistency you get from like medical filters and things like this. It's not just we have a random process that on the overall sort of achieves a waterproof breathability. They have a super consistent, super durable, washable, exciting product that even after use, especially compared to some of the nanoporous membranes out there, after a single wash, their performance drops like 50%. So it's really exciting to see this new thing emerge on the market. But as an innovator and as a designer, I kind of think that it's a little bit redundant to focus so much on these waterproof, breathable fabrics. Because at the end of the day, anything that is laminated, anything that is bonded, anything that is a complex medley of a bunch of different materials like this, it's going to have a failure point, especially when you're dealing with little tiny like microporous holes. We can design garments that are just fully waterproof, that have the breathability built into the patterning and built into the design of the garment. Something that I would use for example, I think something people can relate to or visualize is, if you're doing Alaskan king crab fishing, you're wearing a big, heavy, heavy vinyl jacket or a PVC jacket or a rubber coat of some kind. And to take that kind of philosophy and say, what if we just made you, environmentally proof, waterproof, airtight, and then engineer all the breathability through the seams and through the design of the garment itself? I think you're going to have something more durable and longer wearing.
Mm. So it's not piece of cake. We got one more of such type of products. It's a company called, Teijin from Japan.
Oh, yeah, Teijin. They make incredible, beautiful stuff. a lot of the suppliers out of Japan. In fact, they've sent us some materials for a 30-day challenge, and we're going to be showing off some of their stuff and some of their new developments. As we make some shit, we're going to, I don't know, exactly what they sent us. I think it was 4 or 5 different articles from knits to a waterproof membrane. And so we're going to play with that during the challenge and see what it's like.
So you've been working with their Miraim fabrics, which is, you know, just like you said, it's polyethylene, like Spectre or Dyneema.
I'm not exactly sure specifically what we have, but if you guys have a request, we can reach out to them and make some demands as well.
So yeah, that's
yeah,
clear.
That's really interesting. But like speaking about this whole breathability and waterproofness and the buzzwords that are just flying around from each brand in every location, like just, you know, there are a lot of talk about being technical, being, you know, all this advanced clothing, apparel, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. And there are a lot of falses that people don't know. Again, we spoke about it, like that this is, a lot of it is greenwashing, you know, putting it on stickers and stuff. But like, do you have a specific trend in mind that is completely just false, like, you know, everybody's picking graphene and like how it's the next material, but nobody can do it, and so everybody puts graphene on their freaking jacket, and it's like we have a graphene jacket.
Yeah, no, we have a couple suppliers that can coat things with graphene, and it's more just like, yeah, we can do it, and then we can run a bunch of tests and see how it's different, because we don't really know what that does. Is even the industry's perspective is not really sure
and
what the impact and what the benefit
to do
is.
With the whole material.
But of course, there are some like really exciting things. In some cases, shoe soles that last a ridiculously long time are already being produced. What technology is just straight up bullshit?
Except for membranes and stuff, it's just like a lot of it. Yeah, we talked about it. But like, I mean, a lot of brands recently, and you know, a lot of I guess newer companies are trying to advertise their technical apparel via those ways. Again, we just membranes are obviously a long way.
So I guess,
you know,
it is a graphene membranes, which is on the top of this huge.
Let me throw it this way. I'm gonna broaden the question out a little bit, because I think I can't think of any one thing in particular in terms of a technology. But I can say that the way that almost every single technology is marketed and sold is absolute horseshit. You know, I'm a chemist. I work in this industry. I have a whole team of other folks around me that are experts in their own individual perspectives as well. And we encounter... No, in fact, let me not say we encounter. I would say most of the write-ups that we encounter... from not only, because it's interesting, you see a textile that will come from a brand, a brand like the consumer facing brand, and it'll have a name on it, like whatever that particular brand wanted to assign to the name to kind of make it sound like they made something custom. When you go to the mill, you'll find out that kind of custom branded in-house textile for whatever that brand was is something right off the shelf, and it might be used by 10 or 15 different companies. And when you look at the marketing and the technology being communicated from the mill itself, it's usually quite honest in saying this is exactly what this does, or this is what we've tried to do with it. And then you take that exact same material being spoken of by the brand it's using for the consumer market, and it doesn't make any fucking sense at all. Like, it just completely falls apart. We actually sit here often, probably at least once a week, and gather around and read some product write-ups. And I will say the write-ups for marketing, they're beautiful poetry. They're wonderful examples
obviously.
Of storytelling. But I'll stand in a room here with two chemists and we'll be saying, I have absolutely no idea what the fuck they just said. It sounded like they just did they just boil some polyester in some salt water maybe? But they'll have this 4-paragraph long flowery thing that makes it sound like, you know, this is the be all and end all solution to keeping your nuts cool.
That sounds like most of brands recently.
So I'm going to say that there's a lot of incredible technology that has us like super jazzed, and there's a lot of ways to use these technologies that create actual value that's perceived to the consumer. But because most of it is developed not by the design studios, but by the vendors and the textile mills and so on, I think there's a misinterpretation. It's kind of like when you go and you tell your aunt what you do and she tells all her friends, but she didn't really understand it. And she tells all her friends something that's a little bit off. Yeah. It's the same sort of system. You know, you're definitely playing this telephone game.
Definitely that. Yeah.
But, and again, you're coming back to something that we want to address with Intern and the way that we work with brands and makers and students and things is they're being educated for an industry that largely doesn't really exist and in a very idealized circumstance. So we want to kind of bring this reality back and say, can we teach people to design for manufacture? Being able to open up Clo and designing a beautiful garment doesn't mean that you've figured out how to make that garment. 99.5% of that time in terms of making something technical needs to happen at the patterning, needs to happen at the construction. Even just sitting there in front of a taping machine and doing the exact same thing 300 times at a slightly different speed, slightly different pressure, slightly different temperature until you get the exact perfect result for that circumstance. And if it's maybe three layers of fabric instead of two, even if it's the same fabric, you got to go and you got to go do all that again. And that's kind of the difference between good and great. And most companies out there, they come up with a drawing or a 3D model and they send that to the factory and the factory figures all these things out, sometimes even down to the patterns.
I think all of the great designers and actual great clothing makers in the world and in the history of fashion and just apparel making, all of them came from the bottom. They all came from the bottom, and this is the only way you actually understand what you are doing and what you have to bring to the what you can bring to the market.
But the problem is that the bottom these days, you can completely skip the idea of sitting in front of a sewing machine and just sewing.
True.
Lowing out some fabric and cutting it and sewing it. There's ways to get around sewing, and I think there's a lot of people out there that are in fashion that don't want to sew.
A lot of people in fashion don't know how to sew.
The huge majority of people don't want to sew, and the huge majority of innovations and fun little kind of perspectives that we find that bring huge values to business comes from sitting at the sewing machine. And literally, it could be something as simple as, hey, we came up with a guide. We came up with a jig. If you put this fixture on here, you don't have to use any hands to run this material through this machine, and it's always accurate. It could be something as simple as that, but you're never going to figure that out unless you've sat there and almost put a needle through your thumb.
But maybe the recent, popularization of high core, active wear and all that stuff that's going on in the, before everything was shut down, all the fashion weeks, they had those shows where people were literally walking in hike gear, but it's all fashion. I think this might influence the next wave of people who are actually interested in such clothing.
The next wave, and I can tell you right now, the next big trend for the industry right now, a huge focus for 2021, 2022 is... And this is really funny coming from someone who has both worked at Lululemon and lives in Vancouver. The trend is athleisure. And it's hilarious because living in Vancouver, this has been the mainstay boiling point, especially in the great yoga pant empire, for the past almost 20 years since this company emerged. But apparently athleisure is what comes next. And actually, if I can go to my files here, I can pull up a document and I can give you a direct quote of Chip Wilson and precisely what he had to say about athleisure. He had a definition for it, and I do believe I have it in one of my...
Yeah, but athleisure, yeah, but we were talking.
But yeah, when I give you the kind of the definition of it here, it'll make a little bit more sense as to why it's coming about right now. So at the time, it wasn't known as athleisure. It was called casual sportswear. And it's a huge multi-billion dollar industry today, obviously. But it was created by, and I quote, expanding casual wear into faux athletic gear sold largely to non-athletes by applying synthetic fabric to athletic cuts. But even back in the time this quote was created from Chip Wilson, who invented this market category, he said at that point in time, it's time for the education that consumers and the industry have learned in this field to amount to an evolution in that category. And we like to think that you know, we're trying to respond to that evolution, creating new product categories that apply new technologies and techniques towards making apparel that performs in all situations. Kind of a different approach to the market overlap, creating products with a price and style that kind of appeal to everybody. We don't have to make yoga pants. We don't have to make running pants. We don't have to make hiking pants. We can just make pants, and we can make them really damn well. And they could do 99% of the things that you need to do in your life. Sure, if you want to go climb the north face of Mount Iger, you're going to need a different set of kit. But for everything that you need to do, I think taking the concept of and the cut and the fit and the appeal of like a pair of jeans, but making them more abrasion resistant, making them more waterproof, making them a little bit stretchier. You know, these are nothing but benefits with very little change to the kind of consumer perception.
Well, if you can bring me yoga pants that I can walk up the north face of whatever mountain, like yoga any mountain hiking. At this point in time. Yeah, yoga hike gear. I mean, I think that's the next big thing. I'm just saying, like, if anybody here
listening. What I'm saying is that, like, okay, let's say even here in the city of Vancouver, where you're like a 15-minute bus ride to some of the nicest trails in the world, and in a pretty extreme atmosphere on the side of a mountain, too. I know a lot of people that consider themselves active folks, and they might only get out there maybe 6 or 7 times a year themselves. 99% of the time, you know, they have to take that 30-minute trek to the bus in the downpour, or they got to step over a puddle. So my thing is, you know, when I'm wearing something expensive, I all of a sudden have this hyper awareness of my environment. You know, you're being a little bit more delicate with how you step, with how you reach. You don't want to rub up against the concrete. What if we use the technology to kind of solve all of those concerns that you have in your day so that you can focus 100% of your thought energy on you? When we were doing the 30-day challenge, someone kind of presented us this really cool perspective we've evolved over the past couple of years, and it's this idea of fight or flight or your pet response as related to clothing. If you are wearing a blazer and a suit and it's expensive and it constricts your movement, your entire inner thought process before you're able to make a decision has already restricted a whole branch of the decision tree because it knows that you can't even put your arms in the air right now. So when you're wearing clothing that constricts your movement, you're also constricting your thought. So I like to take the philosophy, and here at Intern, we like to take the philosophy that if we can essentially imagine every little situation we've been in where, you know, a backpack strap has fallen off or a sock has gotten wet or you've torn a knee when you've fallen on your bike. Can we design all of those solutions so that you can go out and perform and just do you, knowing that your apparel is already kind of there to support you?
Well, hopefully that comes. Yeah. Hopefully that comes.
And I think it's ironic that we use all these super athletes to advertise these products. I think that's weird. Because, you know, you're not a runner. You're a jogger. You don't have a support team when out there when you're running, helping you keep pace. You don't have a dietitian helping you, you know, maximize your thing. You're not, you know, your entire existence in life, running isn't your primary occupation. It's just something you do.
And the fisherman's is so you're also a sportsman as well. I mean.
In no matter what that specific category is, I think it's a little bit ironic that for the everyman, the every person, the guy that's out there fishing, you know, a few times a year, the person that's out on the mountain just, you know, casually trail running or hiking or maybe just going on an overnight camping trip, they don't have the same needs as that guy that's on the north face of the Eiger trying to break the time record. But he's the guy that the gear is built for. So what if we just rewound a little bit? We threw the baby out with the bathwater and we asked ourselves again, why is this like this? Why is it not like that?
It goes straight to, you know, your work with the back and bus on, you know, this like cover all jacket and pants. So how did it come?
So that's actually, you know what, that whole project was kind of a frustrating nightmare, but it gave us an opportunity to develop an entire collection of just about everything you can imagine, from socks to underwear to hats to coats to custom designed materials. I think there was about 28 pieces in total in the course. I think we did the entire development from idea to starting to ship product in the course of about 11 months. So it was a pretty unprecedented example of doing a huge brand scale of development, starting from ground zero, even through to the measurement blocks and the fit maps and all these things. So it was a huge opportunity for Intern to be able to open up some of these conversations with some of the industry. And we wish the brand all the best. They're on their own now. They got to sell product and support their brand. And essentially, we do the manufacturing and we do the storytelling and we kind of create as much as we can to support. But it's in their hands now, and we can't wait to see it grow.
Yep, that's cool.
That's, yeah. Yeah, and so bringing it all back to the, you know, to the start of our conversation with your design process, can you, like, expand on this for our listeners so they can check you out and stay tuned for that? Can you expand on the next iteration of the 30-day design challenge and, like, what are your big plans in terms of
what
do you want to create during those days?
Well, yeah, what we create is entirely up to the community. Every morning we kind of wake up and we look at the comments and the pool of discourse and things like this, and we see what people want and we just make it up at the spot. So there's really no plan on what the products are. But what we are going to do for the next 2 weeks from here until about the 14th or 15th of April is we're going to show a little bit of the enormity that goes into planning and share a little bit of what we've been up to over the past couple of years that kind of makes all of this possible. Because it's a mix of, it's a suffer fest of work, and it sucks to wake up every day and just work like 15, 16 hours to try to make a product from scratch and document it and share everything. But it is still very approachable for somebody at home to just wake up and just start making product. So what we want to do is kind of blend what the industry has access to and what we've gained access to and with what the maker has access to, and share a little bit behind the scenes, answer their questions, show some process, share our own process of not only designing product, but this time we're going to follow our manufacturers. So whatever products that we come up with this time that seem to have some demand or interest, we're going to follow it for the next few months from here until June or July, August or so, as it goes through the manufacturing pipeline and head over to Vietnam and Japan and maybe Sri Lanka as well, to show the manufacturing process of how all these things come together. So we don't just want to show kind of like one man suffering behind a sewing machine. We want to show of like, this is what the industry's about. We've reached out to a whole bunch of our friends and makers from across the industry. I don't actually know right now if they want to officially be associated with the brands they work at. But I'll just say, some of the big tech wear brands that some of the designers that work there are going to be doing some projects alongside us. There's some textile companies that are essentially just throwing us challenges and have sent us some fabric and said, here's some new stuff. Some of it's available, some of it's not. Go do something with it. And they've kind of given us some loose challenges. But really, it's we play it day by day. And we let people ask what they want to see, and we just do our best to try to do that. I think we're going to try to... I found a big box of Max pouches from our early days, our very first product we released way back with Mass Drop.
Amazing.
I think we're going to try to do some maybe giveaways or sales or something like
should
that.
Should I wait for...
raffles, games.
Should I wait for some duty packs?
Duty pack is that... To be honest, like typically it takes me maybe a couple hours to like cut and sew a backpack with every single component for the duty pack already cut, laid out and ready and pre-marked with all its little details. It takes me over 70 hours to construct one of those. So that is a product that we have been developing a way to make it a more efficient, reasonable to traditional bag. And we have patterns for that. And I think one of the days during the challenge, we're going to share the pattern, share the process, share everything, and let people make their own.
70 hours for a duty pack, guys. That's determination. I'm just saying. That's definitely determination.
That project, honestly, even shipping those things, that was a 9-month project. It was like a pregnancy. It was a pregnancy for me. It was my babies. It was hard to see the boxes go out the door.
Yeah, well, it definitely showed to that. And rounding things up, can you share to your listeners something, like somebody that you're personally a fan of, or like a smaller creator, not specifically a brand, but you know, if they have their own thing going, you can
I got this, we can link it
down below, so yeah, so everybody can check them out.
One of my favorite makers, Endless Planet, because in the world of fashion, there is one particular category that is just considered unobtainium. And the amount of self-sacrifice that I see so many designers take to end up in this industry is really kind of heartbreaking, that people will spend 10 years to be, you know, arm's reach away from the person doing the design. And that aspect of the industry is footwear, shoes. There's some specialized equipment, and there's a specialized process, and there's a heritage to it. And just generally speaking, there's very few designers out there that are willing to just bite the bullet and say, I'm going to go make some shoes. And one of my favorite creators that is, a maven, maniac, incredible designer, is Nirec Footwear, N-I-R-E-C. I believe it's Night Recreation is what that's short for. But Nirec Footwear, yeah, on Instagram. This is one guy, one sewing machine, incredible determination. And frankly, even the one-off shoes that he makes for such reasonable costs are of a better design concept and production value than anything I see out of the huge brands. The dude's a G, and we're going to be doing a day of footwear design with him during the 30-day challenge too. I've reached out and pinged.
Okay. So I think everything that Ender talked about, it's going to be linked down below. Stay tuned for the 30-day challenge, and make sure to give everyone from the links down below a like, a follow. So spread the love during this hard days of quarantine. Everybody around the world, we're with you, holding our hands, I guess, via the internet. Thank you, Techer Intern, for coming on the podcast. Thank you for being
with
us. Thank
you for hosting us. And I just want to end with one little sentiment. We have our own challenge to you, the community. Reach out to somebody that you follow, reach out to somebody that you love, reach out to some creatives within your own network. And while you guys are all trapped at home, while you guys are in quarantine, even if you're not in quarantine, figure out a project that you guys can collaborate on remotely over the next 6 weeks or so. Figure out something that you guys can do. Make a new friend, start some cross-pollination.
And use those days for your advantage and, you know, advancement in the world of whatever you want. Thank you.
Make cool shit with cool people.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for more episodes of Tech Talk, and we'll see you guys around. One more thing, guys. We're launching our Patreon page. If you're able to support us, link is in the description down below. It's highly appreciated. We're extremely grateful to still be able to produce and share our content with you. Stay safe, wash your hands, support each other. Tech Hunter out.